Blog Talk Radio.
Intergenerational wealth transfer is a huge issue now for advisors and clients. Joined today by the 43rd Treasury of the United States, Rosie Rios, to discuss just that. Rosie, welcome.
Thank you.
So Rosie, when you think about the intergenerational wealth transfer that's going to go on, what do you think about?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks for having me. And if you're only thinking about it now, you're behind the eight ball. The train has left the station. I keep saying that, and it's absolutely true, especially when it comes to this topic. So what people need to realize about intergenerational wealth is it's already happening, right? So we're talking about kind of so the boomers, which is my generation, you know, we have the most discretionary income. But this next generation, basically, you know, the millennials, although it's pretty much anyone born in the mid-90s and later, you know, are going to inherit this opportunity to really think about investments in a totally different way. So when you think about those generations, so technically, you know, the millennials or anyone born between 1980 and 1996. But again, look, my son's 26, my daughter's 21. I call them the Robin Hood investor, right? But in reality, you know, these are kids who grew up with the internet, right? So anyone who's grown up with the internet, they see the world as very flat. It's no longer what they're taught at home, what they're taught in the classroom. It's what they see. It's what they've learned, the good, the bad, and the ugly of the internet. They're very tech savvy. They're very confident. But they don't have the experience that perhaps a lot of wealth managers, financial analysts, managers, et cetera, need to really understand how to think about their investments. So for me, you know, it was very important that I get into their heads. My daughter's 21. My son is 26. When I left the Obama administration in 2016, after serving both terms, I studied these kids, I call them kids, for 2 years at Harvard. And I really wanted to understand kind of the social, political, economic way that they think and how they behave. And for them, you know, it's kind of this one-and-done world, right? It's set it and forget it.
Right.
Technology means everything to them. They're very, very confident. They're very progressive, and they're very savvy. But again, they lack a lot of the world experience that my generation still has. So even here now in this economic downturn, this unprecedented economic downturn, this is where, in my opinion, the wealth management industry has a huge opportunity. It's no longer about taking them out to golf and buying them dinner. It's really kind of thinking about how to use technology and information in a totally different way. So if you're not already on their app, on their phone, and that's how they access information, if you're not already there, you know, you're behind. You're behind. So for people to really think about how to use technology, how to kind of think about kind of out-of-the-box approaches to investments, and really it's not just about assessing value, it's creating value. And again, really being able to understand how these kind of exotic investments work, whether it is crypto, whether it is thinking about getting into, whether it's the metaverse, et cetera, these pre-IPO opportunities, and the time is now. The absolute time is now.
So if the time is now, and they're getting all that information from the app on their phone,
absolutely.
The percentage of that I was hearing about, the millennials and the next generation are getting their information from TikTok,
absolutely.
It's staggering.
Absolutely.
Well, how do advisors change the tide on that?
Well, look, I mean, you have this great show here, Matt. Yeah. Are you doing anything on TikTok?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
No, nothing on TikTok.
Come on.
You got a missed opportunity.
You're behind the eight ball.
I am.
You're behind the eight ball.
I mean, I love social media.
No, absolutely. This is the TikTok generation. It's funny, when you look at the stats, you know, Facebook for them is kind of like not their thing.
Right.
Maybe Insta occasionally, but right now it is TikTok. So is it that hard to think about how to communicate with your clients? In a simple TikTok message, right? So what I just said at the beginning, you know, can you get that down to 15 seconds? Probably. And can you think about, again, how these kids, I'm going to keep calling them kids, how these kids think about money? Believe it or not, they're actually very conscientious. So, you know, and they're not really thrilled about credit cards, but they'll use their debit cards, right? They use their debit cards, which is really, again, very, very interesting. But when they think about investments, and again, I call them the Robin Hood investor because it's not this kind of disciplined approach. Right? In that case, you know, you're betting it on red and hoping it happens.
Yeah.
Versus, here's what you need to think about, here's how to think about it, here's what your choices are, here's this choice versus that choice, and here's how to manage your risk.
Yeah.
Right? That's not the way they think. But that is the way they should be thinking, right?
Yeah.
How to diversify their options. And believe me, optionality is everything to them. They just don't know what those options are.
Yeah. Well, I think about what you're saying is going to where the puck's headed to, and something you've really done throughout
yeah,
your career.
Absolutely.
And now you're thinking about, you're going to be doing a reality show,
yeah, that's
too.
Right. That's right.
Which is
that's
exciting.
Right. That's right. So it's already started. It's called Unicorn Hunters.
Okay.
So unicornhunters.com. It's an investment series like Shark Tank, but on steroids.
Okay.
So I'm a co-host along with Steve Wozniak, and the co-founder of Apple, and Lance Bass from NSYNC, and a
right.
few others. So Shark Tank, for example, is looking for the next cool backpack. We're looking for the next billion-dollar company, hence the name Unicorn Hunters. So it's these founders who come on the show. They give us their pitch. We peg them with questions. At the end, we decide if we want to invest in them. And then because of crowdfunding from the 2012 Jobs Act, the global audience can decide if they want to invest in them too. So again, it's different. It's still obviously following the letter of the law, but it's exactly kind of personification of what the spirit of the Jobs Act was supposed to be, right? So it does two things. It democratizes access to capital on two levels. One is for Main Street to be able to invest in pre-IPO opportunities where that was really a closed system.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the founder, the entrepreneur, who's looking for their own kind of access to capital niche. Again, usually a closed system. So to kind of have these two come together in a very unique and different perspective is something that I think, you know, again, you know, I worked on the Access to Capital Conference
yeah.
and Treasury in 2011,
mm-hmm.
which led to the task force who would make the recommendations that became the Jobs Act of 2012. So for me, kind of coming full circle 10 years from that time period to now is great and fulfilling, and, you know, government works.
Government works, and when you're a great unicorn like you are, you find other great unicorns. Rosie, thank you so much.
Thank
great
you.
Conversation.
Great to be here, Matt. Thank you. Get on TikTok.
I will. Hey, for Edge TV, I'm Matt Ackerman.
We value what we see every day.
We're living at the beginning of the largest transfer of wealth in human history, and in this video, I'm going to share four things that you can do to take advantage. That's right, you and I are living at the very beginning of the greatest transfer of wealth in human history. Experts are estimating approximately $30 trillion U.S. dollars will change hands between one generation and the next over the next 30 to 40 years. Now, this is wealth that has been accumulated by both the greatest generation and baby boomers. And as they are aging out, as they're retiring, and as they are passing away, the wealth that they've accumulated is passing on to the next generation. Now, of this $30 trillion, $9 trillion, 30% of it, is liquid. It's cash, houses, stocks, bonds, things that are easy to pass on from parents to children. Now, you might be saying, well, gosh, I don't really have a wealthy family. I grew up eating Hot Pockets and stovetop stuffing, and I'm not expecting to receive a windfall when my loved ones pass away. And that's okay. The 30% that's going to be passed on as inheritance really isn't the big opportunity for folks like you and I. The big opportunity here is that 70%. You see, the 70% of the $30 trillion, the $21 trillion, is tied up in privately owned businesses. These are businesses that were founded and are run and owned by baby boomers. Baby boomers are getting to the point now where they need to retire, and they're looking for ways to liquidate their company, the assets, and the wealth that's in those companies so that they can use them for retirement and for health care and for the later years of their life. This creates a huge opportunity for the people that know about it and are in a position to take advantage. Just think for a minute back to the economic crisis a few years ago. For most of us, it was emotionally and financially stressful, destructive, and ugly. But for a select few people, they were in a great position, and they were actually able to benefit. When the stock market crashed, they had cash, and the economy wasn't affecting them on a day-to-day basis. They were able to take that cash and buy assets on the cheap. Now here we are many years, almost 10 years later, and those assets have quadrupled, if not more, in value. Those people have benefited greatly. We're faced with the same situation now over the next 30 to 40 years. Okay, ready? I'm going to give you four things that you need to do if you want to take advantage of this opportunity. Number one, get your financial house in order. You don't have to have $1 million in the bank to buy a business, but you do have to have your financial act together. You should do the following. Make sure to run a personal financial statement and get a sense of what your net worth is. Eliminate all of your credit card and consumer debt. Make sure that you've got 3 to 6 months operating cash in a bank account somewhere. And then lastly, make sure that your credit score is as good as you can possibly make it. The thing is, it's not that you have to have all the money in the world to be able to buy a business, but you have to look like a good risk to those that are willing to lend money. So you may want to go to the bank to buy a business, or you may want to go to friends and family, or you might even get the seller or vendors to help finance a deal. But to be successful in that, you've got to have a good financial complexion. So make sure that you get that sorted out so that that doesn't stop you from jumping on a deal. Number two, become financially literate. Do you know how to read a P&L or a balance sheet? Do you know what EBITDA is or how to value a company? Every industry has its own language, its own vocabulary, and its own fundamentals, and business and wealth are no different. They're easy concepts to grasp, but they are unique, and you've got to spend a little bit of time to get your arms around them. You have to be comfortable with them. You don't have to be the Wolf of Wall Street or Albert Einstein to use or understand them, but you do have to spend a little bit of time to be financially literate. This is going to go a long way in helping you be successful as you navigate the deal-making process. Now, it's quite easy to get this kind of information. You can find tons of resources, all free, online. You can read books that are available either in your library or Amazon. And, of course, you could even take some courses at your local community college if you're that kind of learner. It shouldn't take a ton of time, but you've got to make sure that you're comfortable with the concepts and that you're fluent in financial terms. Number three, build your network. Now, I know what you're thinking. Mike, I hate networking. And you know what? I do too. There's nothing worse than going to some networking event, not knowing what to say, awkwardly shuffling around, trying to find someone that meets your gaze so that you can introduce yourself, only to walk away feeling like a dope. I'm not suggesting that kind of networking. In fact, I'm suggesting that you meet and grow relationships with essentially two types of people, which I'll share with you in a minute. But first, I want to tell you why networking is so important. The companies that are going to be up for sale over the next 30 to 40 years, the ones that are of any value, are not going to be listed on Craigslist. You're not going to be able to get online, search for companies for sale, and find these amazing opportunities to change your life. You see, these kinds of companies are sold informally through word of mouth, through connections, and through networks. Now, let me tell you the two kinds of people that you want to be looking for. Essentially, you want to be looking for business owners, entrepreneurs, people that own small and medium-sized businesses. And secondly, you want to be looking for the people that advise them. That would be people like accountants, attorneys, financial advisors. These are the people, these two groups are the people that know when businesses are up for sale. They run in packs. They talk to each other. They share information. And so when someone's going to sell a business, typically his other business owner friends know about it. His accountant knows about it. His attorney knows about it. And they're trying to help that owner liquidate that company. So what you want to do is make sure that you're connected to as many of these people in your town as possible. And it's very simple. It's just reach out and invite them for coffee. Tell them who you are. Tell them what you're trying to accomplish. Ask them about their business and what they do. Start networking. You don't have to just beat the bushes every week saying, hey, do you got anything for me? Build some relationships. And this will benefit you in so many other ways in your work, your career, and your life. But I'm telling you, if you want to take advantage of the opportunities coming over the next 30 to 40 years, you have to have a strong network of business owners and the people that advise and serve them. And finally, number four, be willing to stretch yourself. You see, this is the one that keeps most people from taking advantage of opportunities. Most people would be willing to get their finances in order and probably could do that in under a year. Most people would be willing to get financially literate. And if you applied yourself, you could do it in a weekend. You'd even be willing mostly to do some networking. It might be a little awkward at first, but you might push yourself and send a few emails or send a couple LinkedIn connections. But it's the stretching yourself. It's the putting yourself out there. It's the fear of the unknown and failure that's going to keep most people from taking advantage of this opportunity. Now, people that already own businesses, people that are already financially literate, people that swim in this ocean already, they're going to be taking advantage. They're not holding back. But if this is all new to you, I want to encourage you that if you're willing to stretch yourself, if you're willing to put yourself out there, to fail a little bit, to be embarrassed, maybe to look stupid in a discussion, if you're willing to do those things, what's going to happen is you're going to learn. And when you learn, you become excellent. If you do that, if you do these four things, I guarantee you that you are going to transform your life. You will take advantage of the greatest transfer of wealth in human history. And it's happening now. You have an opportunity, and I want to encourage you, be willing to stretch yourself. We're living at such an amazing time in human history. Never before has anything like this happened. And so I'm hoping that this little video has somehow inspired you and maybe given you a few things that you can start doing today so that you too can take advantage of it. Now look, if you did enjoy the video, do me a favor and give me a like. And even better, I'd love it if you'd subscribe. If you haven't done so already, please hit that red subscribe button below. I post regularly on things like life, success, wealth creation, and entrepreneurship. And I'd love to have you along for the conversation. So guys, thanks again. I appreciate your time, and I'll see you soon.
Trouble trying to climb the ladder of success. Living in a world where every day my strength is put to the test. But I face that test with courage, and I just won't be discouraged. I'm determined, you see, to reach my
possibility.
Now I run across so many things that could block me, but I made up my mind. So much more than I can see, and so much that I can become. That's why I'm reaching for the sun.
I see my possibility. Just woke up and found him here in me.
Nothing but green lights ahead of me. I'm looking for the dollar track. Get ahead, I want the back.
I see my
الحمد لله رب العالمين بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم رب العالمين واشهد ان لا اله الا الله واشهد ان محمد رسول الله السلام عليكم ورحمه الله تعالى وبركاته We're good. I see you shining over there.
Yeah, we're good.
You know, happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
Oh,
you know what?
Yeah, every time it happened for them, it happened for you.
That's right.
That's how I go, right? Yeah. Allahu Akbar.
Yes.
So,
yes,
alhamdulillah. So, for those souls on the outside of our secret, today is my grandson, her son's birthday, Ibrahim.
Yes.
Ibn Idris Islam, alhamdulillah. I'm gonna get at him before it's over. You know how we do. Alhamdulillah. So it's been an interesting couple of days for you. Though, I mean, all your life is totally interesting. I already know that, but in the context of the Detroit piece,
this weekend has been a full one. You know. This journey of balancing responsibility and still trying to live life, right, and be productive, it's been a beautiful struggle, let me say that, because I know that in those challenges, I learned something new about myself, how I interact with others, and what it says about areas of myself that need work, that needs to, a muscle in me that needs to be strengthened and brought to my awareness. So, you know, in the initial impact, oh, for sure, the stress, the real human emotion and reaction jumps in. And then you got to remind yourself, yo, Allah's in charge. I know it feels a way. I know you don't like this.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
but if today was to end today, did you still remember that Allah has gotten? I'm like, yeah, then whatever happened after that, I'm all right. You know,
you got to embrace it. I know you're doing it. You got to embrace it. Trust this. But I know we're gonna move on with your piece, and I know you may possibly move out a little early because of the specialty of the day. But you know, I mean, it always you tap into something that I know that critically that I had to learn. You know, like the gentleman that just ended the piece that we played, the willingness to stretch yourself, right? And so it's attitude, I'm saying, a perception, mindset. Yeah, mindset, I'll use that. It's like, there's certain things that you, quote, unquote, don't like, don't feel good.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay, well, these are the places where the better, deeper, and more functional, useful readings of the Quran come in. So it may be that you dislike a thing through which Allah brings about a great deal of good. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, man, I don't like this. Okay, well, it might be some good hiding behind that thing you ain't liking, right?
It's
like, go in there and go do it, right? And when you talk about psychological health, right? If people have certain phobias, whatever those phobias may be, it could be snakes, butterflies, spiders, people, whatever. You have to voluntarily expose yourself to a little bit of it, so that you can break the whole thing down. But it has to be voluntary exposure. It can't be somebody throwing a snake in front of you. You know what I'm saying? You're trying to break you up from snakes. You know, it's like, hell, you're going to give me a total breakdown, right? No, the idea is that I have to go into a building that I know there's a snake in it, right? Even though I don't see the snake, it's like, okay, I know there's a snake. I'm going inside. Okay, that's a plus. Okay, I'm ready to go home now. I stepped in the building. Stood there for a few seconds, and I stepped out. That's progress, right? Then later on, we get to the point where we can see it or go into the room that it's in or look at it or what have you. Enough about me, mashallah. We want to hear about you.
You kicked me off in an area, a subject that I didn't have no intention of going into, but I'm going to go on into it since, you know, I want to still, you know, give my contribution to this beautiful sacred space. So. Yeah.
Well, follow that spirit. We always say deuces, right? All right. Until
deuces.
We come back. Assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadar Rasulullah. Assalamu alaikum to all of our Blog Talk listeners as well as those who are with us online via Facebook and YouTube Live. My name is Haja Shamila Shuaib. I'm CEO and owner of Love Is Always the Subject, a wellness brand that is peers who create spaces for women to align with their God-given mission and be of use to humanity while using self-love and self-care rituals that enrich and expand who they are and who God has created them to be. Excited to be here. I'm giving some of my time to this moment and us coming together. And like my father had mentioned, I am celebrating the birth of my child, my oldest and only son. And I want to tell you, like, what I thought about in sharing in this conversation. And now when I have the video, I was saying I spoke yesterday. Yes, because we're on Monday. Yesterday, I was honored to share space with the Sisters Holika that was facilitated by Sister Pamela and Sister Haja Judy Musa, and it was amazing. It was an amazing experience for me, and like I said to them, it was an answer to a prayer in real time, because when you're invited to spaces, or, you know, people want you to share some insight or have a conversation, I am fully aware of the fact that I'm have to be responsible with what I share. I have to be responsible with things that I learn, and I have to always check my intention in the sharing. And so when I get into these spaces, I am making sure I'm crossing T's, dotting I's, like, look at that root. Like, is this based in your feelings? Is this, you know, do you have something to back up what, you know, this intuitive idea or this inspired thought around this road that you're going down? So I have to kind of peel back on certain information and be very clear of how it could be of use to those that are in the conversation. And so I think, Imam, I think you are unmuted on the Blog Talk side. So when I put myself in that position to do that, it forces me to be surrender to being a student. It forces me to surrender to what I don't know and being okay with saying, you know, you don't quite understand that part. You might not want to touch this piece of information. Let's go with more of that. But put that in your notes. That's something that you can go back to and really dive down and drill down on, right? And so that's just a note on just us as teachers, as students, us as parents, community members. Like, the learning process is a forever process, right? And it keeps us in check when we have these moments where it's like, oh, I feel like it's this. But, you know, your feelings aren't always facts, right? It just gives you a spark, like, let's look at this. Why does it move you in this way, right? So, example. Been having car issues, right? So today I finally got another call that's getting me closer to, you know, a solution in this car situation I've been struggling with for about a week and a half, right? And when the car situation first happened, it didn't quite snatch the rug up from underneath me. It was just like, okay, my battery's dead. Okay, jump the car. And so jumped the car, and I just figured, that was done. Maybe the light was left on. Something was done. You know, all of those things. So I left it alone. Then 2 days later, it happened again. I said, oh, okay. This was not a one-time thing. This is the signal saying it needs more attention than just jumping of the battery. So I did it again, made an appointment, took it to the people. Then they couldn't figure out what was going on because of whatever, right? There's things electrical, brought my car back, and I just figured, okay, well, until I find someone, I'm going to have to continue to do this jumping the car situation. And then I got up the next morning, and it wouldn't even turn over. It was clicking like it wanted to do something, but it just wouldn't turn on. So now it is DEFCON 3, right? So at that point, my feelings about what was going on with my car have escalated because I'm thinking about my level of dependency on the car. What does that mean for what I'm using the car for? That, you know, all of these things. So I had to ask myself, why is this triggering me so much, right? And it triggering me in this way, it forces me to get to this space where I have to ask myself questions. So when something gives me high anxiety, I go, okay, where are these feelings really coming from. We know that if I've had this car for an extended period of time. It looks great because I'm not a heavy driver. It's in great shape. Got scratch here or there, but if it was on the road, it looked like it was fresh off the, you know, off the lot, right? So I'm assuming internally we good, right? And so I said, what is this really good? Because we knew that this car is not forever and ever, amen. Like, this is not the car that was going to be with you forever. There was always going to, at some point, something was going to happen. So then I had to inspect my feelings as to why this thing with my car triggered me. And it triggered me because I had to handle all of it. Now, at the root, I am a woman that believes men should handle mechanical things. I believe that men should pump the gas. I believe that they should take the car to get the oil changed. They should change the windshield wiper. That is something that I hold to. This is an expectation of Camila, whomever comes past the threshold, that this man knows, okay, Camila does not do the car thing. Even down to taking it to get washed and detailed. But I have spent my life being the one to do that, even though I hold firm to this belief that men handle car stuff. I just get in, drive to get where I got to go to ensure that I'm safe from point A to point B, right? And so it reminded me that, yeah, no, you don't have someone to handle that part of it for you, right? And so my feelings were not in the car. My feelings were in what that car triggered in me, right? And so now I have to have this real conversation with myself. Okay, Camila, so what are we talking about? Are you ready to have the conversation about your need for a relationship, you being prepared to be responsible for the ideal of marriage? And it's like, yeah, so what does that look like? How are you asking for it? How are you looking at what this is supposed to show up and be, right? And so that was one brick in the triggering. The second brick in the triggering was the financial responsibility. The financial responsibility was like, oh, my goodness, how am I going to do this? We live in California. A one-income household in California is very, very difficult, right? Because you're paying for California living, right? And so that triggered another part of me. Like, when I think about my goals as a business, things I want to do, how many I shifted my hair schedule so that I could spend more time building out my other business, knowing that hair was this and the level of energy and time it takes to do hair, it can wear me thin. And I am a firm believer in having my days where I take a break. So, like, Sundays is an untouchable day for me. When Sundays come around, Camila is cooping and getting ready for the rest of the week. Monday is, this is, I dedicate to Monday. Tuesday is a hair day. Wednesday is a day that I work on business stuff. I look at my strategies. I go online and check it. And then Thursday's hair. Friday is I meet with my assistant. We have the plan. So I have this schedule that ensures that everybody gets what is needed so as we build it out. And so it had nothing to do with the car, but what the car triggered in me. So in my mind, and everybody doesn't think like me, in my mind, what happened with my car was a good thing. Because I would not have thought about it if my car would not have showed up. I would not have thought about, okay, Camila, you need to stretch yourself in how you make your business available. So I'm in this space where, okay, we can't do everything online. We're going to have to start vending at events. We're going to have to get out there. We're going to have to figure out ways to market and change your email strategy. You're going to have to, like, look at business grants and start to understand how that looks. Like, it turned something else up in me that said, look, there's areas that you've gotten comfortable with. I have to put you in an uncomfortable situation to ensure that you start to move forward and move towards this goal, and this has to happen, right? So in the same way, if you're saying, like, you know, I want to be healthy, I want to do this, I'm trying to prepare myself for this trip, there's a moment that something will happen that you think what you're doing is enough, and then a moment will hit you health-wise that says, maybe what you're doing isn't enough. Maybe you want to rethink how you are being active or inactive. And so this big moment, this significant emotional event, will jolt you into the reality of what you have been praying for. And it's not meant to hurt you. It's meant to give you a warning, right? right? And it's a soft warning. It's a warning that we should be aware and cognizant of, because there's a solution to every single problem, right? So in that, in understanding that part, we are, there are things that we want to do, right? And we're just, and there's so easy for us to think, well, why isn't this happening here? Well, why isn't, I've been doing this, but have you, like, give yourself a real moment and think about what is blocking the thing that you're striving for? Because the vision that you were given, it was not given to just dangle it in front of you and then now it's unachievable. No, it is in front of you and it is achievable, and Allah has given you the resources in order to achieve that thing. But you have to look at the thing that your blinders are on, because it's connected to, you know, for lack of a better term, because English it just really messes us up in so many ways. Like, you have to be able to look at the traumatic center, right? The thing that traumatizes you about it, right? I'm an open book. When I say I'm an open book, I genuinely believe that experiences that I have had in my life have happened to me so that I can give another perspective and a better way of sharing out these the life journey, right? I'm a student of life experiences and feelings that help me to put together puzzle pieces for the women that I serve. So the women that I serve, when they tell me about, you know, their struggles with finances, I know what that feels like. And here's what I did. Let's talk through what your system is. Or women who have dealt with being divorced, or women who are working through finding value with themselves after a divorce or after giving birth. So these are experiences that I have had, and I can bring it to the table, and I can hear, I can listen with very with empathy, and I can listen in a way that can honor their humanity and doesn't shut them down when there is a struggle point, right? But then I can also give them that, did you look at this part of it? You might be only looking at one area of this experience, and you might want to look over here. So I'm giving them another view to see this experience, right? So I say that to say, when I look at this moment of really understanding being someone that has experienced divorce, right, that there is a part of me that is, that has carried fear for a relationship, because, like, I you know, contrary to, you know, popular belief, like, I am doing well. Like, I'm really happy with my life. I'm happy with my life. I enjoy my faith. I find such peace. And there's a part of me that knows that has this fear, and I'm working through this, and this is why I'm sharing this fear of, am I going to have to give up this new level of learning and understanding when I enter into a relationship, when I enter into a marriage? Will they still honor my humanity? Because I've experienced being in a relationship where my humanity was not honored, right? And so this can be this back, you know, blockage, because you don't really want to dissect that. Like, who wants to dive in? It's like looking at a scab and you want to pick at it, and it's like, No, when you see it, you keep coming back to it, and you still nurse it to fully heal it, right? And so that part of it, for me, is something where I have to really dissect, well, what is the real fear really connected to, right? And so when we talk about business, we talk about our wealth, and we talk about our finances, like, sometimes there are blockages about accumulating wealth that makes us feel hold back, right? I used to have a fear about accumulating wealth because of taxes. Like, the taxes was the big boogeyman in the room, but I knew, I'm like, look, Camila, we are striving to hit a six-figure year. Like, this is the goal. We try to hit a six-figure year, because I have this thing in my head about, whew, taxes, whew, what I'm going to do about that, you know? So I only get just enough. And now I'm at this point where it's like, okay, we have to break through, because there's something you have to do, and that requires education. So when my dad used the analogy about the snake in the building, right? So imagine, like, this building has the treasure and the things it is that I need, but there's a snake present in there. I'm called a snake taxes, right? I'm just using this as an example. And so I go in the building, I look around, it's like, ooh, yeah, this could really work, right? So we go on back out. It's like, but I know I'm going to come across it, right? So we set up where, as far as we've gotten in, go out, we come back in. We know it's still there. So it's not, I'm not going to throw away this building, this opportunity because of this snake, right? But that snake is there. So what do? I need to study what snakes do. I need to understand the behavior. What is the best way to trap it? How do I need to lure it out of the building? I need to study this snake called taxes. And when I study this snake, now I'm equipped. Fear is gone because I know what to do. I'm getting the tools necessary. I know where to set it up. If I need to get additional bodies, someone who has the genius mind behind how to catch the snake, how to deal with it, and what to do with it once it's caught. I don't have to do all the things, but I can get individuals who have a knowledge base that will help me to remove it from this building so I can reap the benefits of this space that I've discovered, right? And so this is the part of this journey of anything that we're seeking to move into. Sometimes the blockages, we get excited about the surface parts of what it is that we're getting, that to go deeper, you got to go deeper and understand it. So this with my other business, I established the LLC. I got the business license. I hired an assistant to help me to keep track of budgeting and things like that. I opened a separate business account. I had to see about how I was moving it. That was separate and apart from the business in order for this business to have the capacity to handle becoming a six-figure company or corporation, right? So there are things that I have to learn and know and understand. I need to understand insurance. I have to find a way to get access to legal support, right, that was affordable for the level where my business is. But I had to create the capacity so that when it shows up, I know what to do with it. I know how to manage the responsibility that comes along with saying I have this business, because I have to feed this business so that this business can feed me. And I feed it by giving it the tools necessary for it to recycle and give back what it is that I need. So when we look at how millionaires move, or people who make six figures or multimillionaires, there is a strategy and a structure in the way that they do it. They are not built, these million-dollar companies are not made up of two people in an office. There are a team of individuals. There's a CPA that handles the thing. There's someone that does the marketing. There's someone that looks, that handles the employees. There is a structure in place. So if we have not figured out what that structure is, we are setting ourselves up for failure. The foundation is not strong enough to hold the weight of a six-figure or multi-million-dollar business. We only see the surface ending product of the particular business, but behind the scenes, there's a whole lot of mechanics going on and a lot of individuals that are handling the mechanics because there's a system in place to keep it going, right? So this body, this business as a body requires us to be ready to set up the capacity. Can it hold it, right? So if I'm honest with myself, right now my business is not in a space to hold six figures yet. So what are the things that I need to do to prepare my business to handle six figures? Like when I started the coaching business, and I'm looking at the time because I can unfold it. This I love this part of the subject. When I started my business I started my consulting or the coaching part of the institute, I wrote this goal out of how many women I was going to serve and, you know, what it was going to look like and how many days a week. And it was exciting to put those numbers out there and to know the lives, the number of lives that I would impact, right? And then when I started with maybe four women. Was it even four? I think it might have been. Yeah. No, three. I started with three. The first season I did it, I started with three. And when I started, when I tell you it exhausted me, I was like, girl, you didn't have the capacity. The number that you wrote down, yes, it's going there. You'll be able to have that. But you need a system in place to handle a maximum, the number that you're trying to strike. So the three was enough for me. Like, when I say enough, it was enough for me. And so we set up, I sat with my assistant, and I was like, okay, we need a system. Like, so if we're going to be serving this many people, how are we doing this? How are we sending this package out? How are we handling the recordings and putting it up on the site? We had to come up with a system. And then the next time around, it increased. The number of women participating increased, right? Because I had the capacity to be able to serve them. I put value into what it is that I offered in order for me to show up whole and complete for those who are coming to me and entrusting me to provide a service to them, right? And then the third time, it increased that much more. I had a system in place that holds it and carries it on. And now there's another branch and area of the business that we're moving into. And I was like, yeah, I want to be ready to do this, this, and this. And it hadn't showed up yet, but then I got one opportunity, and I was like, oh, okay, let's see how this works. Let's pay attention to this. And now we are in this phase of creating a system for when these other branches and other areas of the business start to expand. So everything it is that we're looking for and that we're asking for, start to look at the foundational parts of it. If something is happening in real time in your life that triggers a particular emotion in you, be okay with digging down on why is that thing pulling something out, and what exactly is it that's pulling that emotion out of you? What does that look like? Why does that pull these emotions from you? Is there a part of you that you're just not seeing, but you had to have this experience in order to recognize that this is the area of your life that needs the work? Because ultimately, we know that Allah wants us to grow. Allah wants us to have success. Allah wants us to be great. Allah wants us to strive for excellence. So the striving is in the building, the foundational components, in order for you to have the capacity to hold this great life that you visualize for yourself, to be able to hold it in a space where you don't have to fall apart when you get added on there. So when we think about people who win the lottery, right? They win the lottery, and then it's just like all hell breaks loose because the mind didn't have the capacity and their financial education didn't have the capacity to understand how to manage $5 million, $75 million. And so they open a llama farm, and it's like, why are you opening a llama farm in the middle of Alaska? Like, what are we doing? I always had a dream, Mama, start something different. But you weren't even really focusing on what that really looks like and having the capacity or the responsibility that comes with that level of income and your spiritual responsibility that comes with this income, right? Because the income doesn't stop at this concrete level of exchange of money and currency. There's a responsibility that comes along with it. I know that I've gone over time, but, you know, I'm going to stop there and invite me, ma'am, back into the room.
Alhamdulillah. Well, you know, you were born in that first resurrection phase. You are definitely a thoroughbred. You're a natural. And so then the other side of it is that, say God is always on time, in time. So there is no that, no problem.
Yes.
No, it's all good.
Yeah.
In fact, you added a critical piece to what I'm doing. It's like I pulled you to a place where, well, it wasn't in the original plan, but since it's come up, let me go ahead and, you know, go with it, right? And it's the same thing. So the balance of my presentation, I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm going to do this one with you, on screen. I'm going to do let's do a share because I want to share this anyway.
Okay.
But again, you know, I have to put some caveats on this even as I share it. So it's like, this ain't for everybody, you know. So I'm thinking about a record. What is that? Who is that? That's one of the boys. Oak Tree Boy, what's his name?
Yes.
Prince's running buddy. He was at least Purple Rain thing,
Morris,
right?
Day.
Yeah, Morris Day, right? So, you know, it's ain't for everybody, only the sexy people, right? So what I'm talking about right here, this ain't for everybody. Same for everybody. I'm saying the third time, keeping with this, the true sunnah on this thing, right? So, hey, the same for everybody. This is only for the people who have spent some time in this area of knowledge, and especially if you are already well-grounded in al-Islam and Tawheed and the like. I got that. But the point is that if you're traveling, and I mean that in the best way, not in the masonry way, if you're traveling on the road of knowledge, right? And the Prophet says, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, whoever goes out seeking knowledge, they are in the path of God until they return. So if you're in the path of knowledge, then you know, I'll go ahead and put it in cultural parlance right now. You know, there's levels to this thing. You know, there's levels to this thing. So it's like, okay, that's good. And you can be real deep, real strong, and you should be on every level that you get on. But you will also find there's levels over that, and there's levels over that. You know, and the Quran says, وَفَوْقَ كُلِّ ذِي عِلْمٍ عَظِيمٍ. Say, and over everyone who is possessing knowledge is one who knows more. So that's the best I can do to cover myself, you know. It's like, look, if you don't have the wherewithal, don't try this at home. Trust me. I'm just saying. But since you said it, and I'm adding to the idea of you being a natural. And, yeah, sure, I say that as a father, but I'm also saying that based on what I hear and how I experience what you say and the means by which it comes and the moments that it comes in. So like the moment today. So let's get on with the comment. Like today, right? Because you went on to explain what it was that you were experiencing, right? And how you processed it, right?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna go ahead and put the full screen on because I actually can't see my camera screen there. So what are you seeing? What are you seeing?
I see the circle, the consensus.
Okay,
reality.
That's fine. You see that? Is my image and yours still on the screen or not?
My image is still there, yeah.
Okay.
And your picture is there.
Okay, good. So it's fine. So I don't see myself. I just see that main imagery there, that PowerPoint slide there. Okay. Here, and this all goes to your processing, what you talked about, how you process it, right? And I'm using this as a confirmation when I mean, as an example, that you are a natural, right? Meaning that you're in touch with your nature, yourself, well enough to respond the way that nature actually wants all of us to respond. There are many things that we know. but we don't have the words for them. Right? And that's everybody.
Yeah.
That's everybody. There's always some. Even Einstein. Einstein, he had to create words to match the ideas that he was having. He had some ideas, and there was nothing. Excuse me, nothing in the vocabulary. So okay, so we're going to make this word right. They're actually called neologisms, right? New words.
Yeah.
And so that's what has to happen, you know. But in the cases where you're not the person that's totally ahead of the field, to where you can't look around in the field and find anybody else that might have already found that word, and so okay, well, we'll just use the word that he used for it, and use the word that she used for it. So you have to become, depending on how far out you are ahead of the field, you may have to create your own words. But if you're coming into a field that's well developed, then it's really just about your, like the gentleman in the piece that we played at the very beginning, he said you just have to learn the language of the field that you're in, right? So it's like you're new to the field, but the field's been around for a long time. So there's always language in the field when you're new to it. But now when you become the leader of the field, then you're going to have to bring some words like paradigm, right? That you can identify the person who coined that phrase. Kuhn is his name, I believe, K-U-H-N. And, you know, it's in use, right? But before he coined that phrase, it's like, okay, how do you say something about when the way the things are done and da, da, da? It's like he, going into that, he comes up with the word paradigm, right? And so then everybody, oh, yeah, okay, paradigm. So now everybody uses it, those who do, they use it without any idea about its history, without any idea about where it came from. They just use it because it's used. I mean, who invented the wheel? Who was the first to learn how to make fire, quote unquote? And it wasn't Prometheus, right? So in any case, I'm saying all that to say that the nature, fitratullahi lati fatara nasa alayh, the nature that has the knowledge of the nature of all things. Do you know that we already know everything to be known about anything? See, now that's for some people, man, what the heck? No, this is our way of life, quote unquote, some call it religion.
Yeah.
It's that Allah says, "Allama Adam al-asma'a kullaha." He taught Adam the knowledge of the nature of all things, right? So who is Adam? You and me, all human beings. We have in us the knowledge of the nature of all things, but it's all latent. It's there as potential. We haven't brought it up, right? We haven't, and there's a phrase right there. It's that, well, since you're bringing it up, right? Oh, he didn't brought up, so, okay. And that's what you did. When you talked about the situation, then you brought up something in me, right? And so the idea is just how natural that is. Now, so about the situation, I'll just read the paragraph. You know, we plan, Allah's already planned, Allah's the best planner. And in fact, the title that I use for the Facebook YouTube side of the presentation sometimes is different from the blog talk side of it. But the other side is intergenerational wealth, man's will and God's will. That's the title that one would see, right? And I have a whole bunch of other slides that go after, but we in following the spirit are going to do as much as we can right there, because it's valuable to understand this, just and it pairs well with the lesson that you've already brought. So let's go ahead and read it. First off, I'm not going to try to go into detail of that image right there, because there's a lot of explanatory inside of all that. I won't do it. I'll mention the book itself, and this individual has many books. I spelled his name wrong. It says I said Bernardo. It's Bernardo, like Bernard with a O, Bernardo Kestrup. And this particular publication is entitled More Than Allegory. Now I've already covered. Look. If you don't have no idea, the Quran warns you, tells you, don't pursue knowledge about which you have no understanding. That is, don't pursue that about which you have no knowledge, right? Don't pursue it. So it's like, if you have no knowledge about something, you have no business pursuing that subject. If it's above your I'm going to keep it simple, pay grade in terms of information, it's like, don't go over there. You get your foundation, get your fundamentals, get your base under you, so that you won't get shook when you go into an area that's really beyond your ability to really comprehend in a rational way, right? And for me, I wouldn't say anything or expose it if I didn't know that my level of understanding was satisfactory to my heart, my mind, and my way of life. So in any case, let's move on. So it is a very good book, but it is very heady. This is a person who has two PhDs, PhD in physics, PhD in philosophy, and did that at a very young age. But he is also the leading mind on the issue, really on the issue of mind. So the point is, this comes from, I'm spending this time, you got a little background noise, sweetheart, spending this time just to give those who want to, you know, dip your toe in the water with all the prior warnings that I've given you, then it's good if you have, you know, the capacity to deal with matters in that way. I can't go into his real thesis right now. I'm only focusing on the part that bears on what we're trying to get to. And all that I have to say is really in just reading that paragraph over there. But he's talking about the image itself. It's talking about how consensus reality, which is when he says consensus reality, is talking about what most people take for granted as understanding, and not meant in a bad way. It's just there's certain things that we just understand and that we agree and that we are on consensus, even though we may not have come to it, whatever, consciously together, but since we're in the same culture, in the same environment, there's certain things that we take for granted. So that paragraph there is saying what I want to say here. And it's this. Just a minute. All right. So there's consensus reality. Let's go with that. Consensus reality, and I've already said consensus reality in his language, it means what everybody agrees with, like right now in some places, obviously in California, sun is still up in some places. Well, the sun is set on the East Coast and the like. But we can agree if it was night all the way around, all across the United States for sure. We can agree that there's stars in the sky, whatever, that dogs bark and that birds sing and fly and bees buzz and all that. All these things are things that we agree about. So there's a consensus. So that becomes the consensus reality. And it goes much deeper than that. But the point is that he's talking about how this reality actually gives birth to religious myths. That's what he's talking about. But this piece right here is not just the religious myths relate to it, but it's also about the nature of life itself, right? And so reading it further, it says, consensus reality is trying to get us to ask the right questions. And that was the thing that, so when you made your statement about how you went about addressing the circumstances you were faced with, and the fact is that the way you were processing it was you knew and had a set of questions to ask yourself, and that's what many people don't do in circumstances as you're describing. There are many others, right? I talk about male-female relationships. Everybody knows that. And I've pointed out to them, said, don't call it an argument, call it a negotiation, right? In your mind, when you're having this so-called argument with your spouse or what have you, that no, it's not an argument, it's a negotiation, okay? And if it's a negotiation, that means you need to know what question to ask, right? It's a negotiation. Mm-hmm. Once you relabel it, no, it's not an argument, it's a negotiation. That's going to change your mindset automatically because you're no longer just trying to win, because if you're having an argument, it's all about winning. If you're having a negotiation, it's all about trying to find the win-win, right? And trying to find the truth, the justice, whatever, and the mercy if need be. But the point is that it's not about a zero-sum game where you win, I lose, you win, blah, blah. So the point is that when you change the paradigm, then you change the strategy. And I'm saying you've used the strategy. This goes back to my point of you being a natural. You are already using the strategy, which the science, this is what I'm sharing, which the science says that's what you need to do. You need to ask the right question. And now it's a demonstration also of this commentary and the fact, which I'm giving this example of, is telling us, yeah, this is how you get through the challenges of life. And the prophet said the right question is half of knowledge. The right question is half of knowledge, right? But if you're not in the habit of asking the questions and the right questions, well, then, yeah, that's where the problem is right there. You don't know the question to ask, right? And so we could talk about other things, like literally, like you talked about the car, and you did it so completely and so beautifully, because in reality, if we can get ourselves into the mind to be able to conceptualize the map, that life is a map, and we're comfortable in our lives because of the map, i.e. our personal reality, right? Those who are married, of course, my husband is over here, my wife is over there, my children over there, my house is over here, my job, my income is over there, my entertainments are over there, my woo-woo-woo, that's my world, all right? And so you keep moving in your life, and all's right with the world, which means your world. All's right with the world until the car don't start. When the car don't start, okay, well, then everything else fades to a blur. It's like, it's not important. It's like, and then what pours in is how much I don't know about what the problem is with this car. So it's like, where are you? You don't know where you are because a big piece that is a part of your whole world has been blown out, and you got to figure out a way, solve the problem, get everything back in place so all can be right with the world again. But if you just go berserk and just fall out, kicking on the floor, head and hands, and not asking any questions, just being blown up, that's not going to get it solved. That's not going to get it corrected. So the idea of in those kind of circumstances, yes, it happens with the husband and the wife, with the mate, with something happened in the marriage or something happened in the business, everything, something happened with our children, doesn't matter. Something happens in the headlines, what have you, you still have to be able to do that. You have to be able to ask the right question and not just react to what's there. Continue this reading. It says, dramatic life events are forceful. That is, they have a force. They hit you, right? Dramatic events are forceful, maybe desperate attempts to lead us to these questions. Now, this is a person who, his idea of God, quote unquote, is he uses language. I'm not going to try to go into it. He uses language. I say, okay, I know what you think you're saying, but what you're actually saying is this. But go on. That's how we have to listen. That's why I tell you, it's like, if you don't understand the vocabulary process by which you can, okay, yeah, I see what you said right there. No, I got a verse over here in the Quran. I got a hadith over here. Blah, blah, blah. So no, that's not correct. But look, your material science side of this thing is good. It's the alhamdulillah. So that's just the way that the Muslims who inherited the heritage of knowledge from the Greeks, who stole from the Africans, I'll give it to you. I don't like to spend a lot of time there. Like, no, don't say that. Okay, it's good. So, but when the Muslims got the knowledge, the Muslims polished it up, cleaned it up, and sent it on to Europe and brought Europe out of the Dark Ages. Well, that's the kind of knowledge capacity that Imam Muhammad rahimahullah gave to those who studied him well in that way. And yes, I will put myself in that category. This is no boast. But the idea is that we have the wherewithal to look at this knowledge. So when he talks about things, even like consensus reality, and he has another thing, mind at large, and he has another thing, obfuscated mind, and that, it's vocabulary, right? So once you understand the vocabulary, bring it down to where it is, you know, in reality, and then take benefit of the knowledge itself, right? So then I'll go back to that sentence where it says, dramatic life events are forceful, maybe desperate attempts to lead us to these questions. So inside of his thinking is, and that's when we start talking about this, well, I got to go ahead and talk about it now a little bit, this dark circle right here. This dark circle, this what he calls it, obfuscated mind, symbolic cognition, all of this is, you know, unseen, in the realm of the unseen. Muslims, yu'minuna bil ghaib, we believe in the unseen, right? And we also recognize that this life, mata'un ghurur, that this life is a goods and chattel of deception, the Yusuf Ali translation says. But that's not all bad. Yes, this life is an illusion, meaning that it might look solid to you, feel solid to you, et cetera, but in reality, it is not solid, right? And then when you go deeper, you'll understand that there's a metaphysical aspect to every material, a physical aspect here, and it is having a function. Now, what's the function? It's doing what God will for it to do. Allah says be, and it is. And everything that's doing what it's doing, from the way that the cell operates, from the way that photosynthesis happens, from the way that thermodynamics happen, the way that all these things happen, it's nothing but the will of Allah. It's nothing but the will of Allah. You can put his name on it, her name on it. It doesn't matter. Show me the mechanism. He didn't create it. He, quote-unquote, discovered it. If he discovered it, that means he took the cover off of it. Okay, well, where was it before they took the cover off of it? It was right there. Until the mind that could take the cover off can say, see, look at that, right? Right there. And now the arrogant one would make you think like they created it. No, no. You didn't create it. You discovered it. And that was a mercy because they encompass nothing of his knowledge except what he pleased. So God said, it pleases me that this knowledge now be available to humanity. So, yeah, you can get the title for the discovery. It's fine. I'm not mad. Alhamdulillah. If you didn't have the cognitive wherewithal to get it, I would never have sent it through you. But because I sent it through you, it wasn't created by you. And it's not just for you. It's for everybody. This is why, again, the religion, Al-Islam, it says the bit of knowledge, meaning that every bit of knowledge, some new knowledge, it said, is the lost property of the believer, and they have more of a right to it. I mean, come on now. It's like we should be, if we're pursuing education anywhere, we should be in the front of everything. Muslim. Right, magna cum laude, summa cum laude, whatever that is, like boom, 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 boom. That's just what we do. It's an everyday thing for us, for as far as now. I'm talking about the Muslim ethos. If we were there, all right, inshallah, and God bless all those who do well. But moving on, so I'm saying all that to say that dramatic life events is the intention from by the will of Allah to force us to ask some questions. And if we do it with tawheed, if we do it with Allah as he is understood, well, that was the plan. That was Allah's plan. It may be that you dislike a thing through which Allah brings about a great deal of good. And Allah puts us in situations to do that. And in the Quran, those readers of the Quran, when you read it, we talk about calamities and different hard things that happen to people, and Allah's intention is for the good of the believer, and it's for good of all humanity if you're submitted to God. But there's one area where it said, and they suffered this and they suffered that. And it said, but why didn't they learn humility? Why didn't they learn humility? Meaning that some of the things that Allah imposes upon us, the design is to get us to be more humble. Why? Why do you want to be more humble? There are people who resonated with the statement that power travels along the path of least resistance, right? And some people resonated for different reasons, but my sister Kalika, she asked the question, said, well, what do you say that it means? She asked me. And my response, and what motivated the presenting of that particular idea, is that power travels along the path of least resistance. So the more humble you are, the more power comes your way. The more power comes, you got to be humble. The more humble you are. But if you're not humble enough, sometimes Allah will humiliate you, okay? Sometimes Allah will put you in a situation that, oh, man, I thought I had that all covered. No. I'll bend down a little bit more, take that second sajda. And then it's like, then it opens up, right? Humility, right? So it's like, that's a part of the mechanism or the means by which Allah raises us up, right? But we have to be more humble to be raised up. Well, sometimes to be raised up, you have to be lowered down. And what lowers us down sometimes are significant emotional events, traumatic, climactic circumstances. Let's move to another sentence. A tremendous mystery unfolds in front of our senses, every waking hour of our lives, a mystery more profound, more tantalizing, more penetrating, and urgent than any novel or thriller, meaning your life, if you really pay attention, is better than any movie or any book you read or any movie you watch, and mashallah, is it more profound, more tantalizing, more penetrating, and urgent. What's more important? you know, who shot John or who shot JR, who shot JR or your life, right? It's more penetrating and urgent than any novel or theory. This unfolding mystery is nature's challenge to us. Are we? See, this is Christ. See, this is you take the light of the Quran with you. You can listen to any scientist and say, oh, because if it's true, you're going to find a correlate for it in the Quran or in something that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam. But of course, you got to be studied on both sides. And Allah knows best. There's no boast. I'm just talking process here, right? So he asked this scientist, who doesn't have the traditional classical understanding of the Tawheed that we have, but he doesn't reject God. He just thinks God is something else. He's kind of like Abraham that stopped at the sun, right? If you don't know that story, then you need to keep reading. In any case, it says, are we paying enough attention to it, right? He said, life is always talking to you. Listen, the Quran says, وَتَقُوا وَيُعَلِمُكُمُ اللَّهُ, and have the consciousness that Allah wants you to have, because Allah is always teaching you. What is that? That's the Quran. Conscious of Allah. This whole thing, Allah created it. His will is what supports it, sustains it. You need to know that. But how do you do it? You have to pay attention. Wattaqullah, wa yu'allimukum Allah. So paying attention. And the Quran tells us that there are those who go about the world, ghafilin. They are unmindful. Unmindful, sleepwalking, right? Even when it says consensus reality there, we've talked about it on occasions. Charles T. Tart, I think it's something, I don't know, I think it might be the Intuitive Edge, maybe. But he has this statement about the way the culture operates is bringing everybody into a cultural consensus trance. Everybody is sleepwalking through the process because there's certain things that we simply take for granted. That's the consensus reality. I consent that we are in the same reality. Another book, The Silent Language by Edward T. Hall. All of it talks about this consensus reality, this consensus trance, that it's like you're moving about. It looks like everybody's conscious, but everybody's not conscious in the way that I'm talking about right now. Yeah, everything is fine. Your groceries are being ticked off by the checker and being bagged up by the bagger, and Everything's moving just fine, and it feels like everybody's awake. But no, most of the world is unmindful. Their mind is not there. 95% of our daily lives are lived unconsciously, okay? So this scientist asks, are we paying attention to it? So the point is, when you understand that that's the nature of life and reality, then you want to always have your consciousness on. And you want to have it on in the way that Allah would have it on, with an awareness of, oh, okay, well, this is how life works. Oh, man, flat tire, whatever the case may be, since cars is the theme today. Flat tire, okay, it's a flat tire. Question, how do you fix it? How can I get it fixed, et cetera? It's not like, why me? No. It's like, move on, slow down. Take a breath. You know, mashallah, inna lillahi inna ilayhi raji'un. You know, that applies not only when someone passes from this world, it's for all calamitous circumstances, right? It says, and then finally, or are we instead cavalierly, meaning nonchalant, right? Are we cavalierly dismissing the whole thing as meaningless illusion? Now, if you do that, then that means you are subject of the ghurur, the matrix, right? You are in the matrix. You're one of those dumb people that the agents can show up in whenever they want to, right? The agent can be here, but then since you're connected to the network and you're operating in ghurur, then the agent of the society that doesn't mean the best for you can come into you and undermine you or use you to undermine someone else. All right, so we had other ideas. I just flashed a little bit, but we'll get back to it, inshallah. But I'm satisfied by the grace of Allah that that's a contribution that can be beneficial. Let me get out of this. Yeah. All right, sweetheart, what you got to say for yourself?
I think that it is definitely an extensive conversation, because what you're speaking about is the ideal of being present, like in the wellness world, there's this conversation about stillness, self-awareness, like, and this, these are terms, these are the buzz terms that are utilized, but what you're speaking to within the, you know, in the wellness conversation is that part. So Islamically, the stillness, we experience that by asking us those questions in times of constantly being reminded and remembering Allah in those moments. Because in that, when you say that Allah is always talking to us, we have to be still to listen. Mm-hmm. Like, we can't prioritize these earthly experiences over, okay, Allah, so what is your will in this situation, right? I have a recording, and I hold it near and dear to me from Imam Qasim Rahim al-Aulay, and he says, I just remember the term, and I don't know if you just mentioned it, Wamarani, that, you know, when we plan in Allah, plan, was it Wamarani?
Yeah, Makaru, Wamakaru, Wamakaru, they plan, Wamakar Allah, and Allah has already planned, Wallahu Khairu Makirin. So it's the Makara.
Yeah.
The root
right.
for it.
So when he was talking to me about it, he says that, you know, people say that we plan and Allah plan, and Allah is the best of planner. And so he said, no, Allah has already planned. Like,
yeah.
It's not you plan a lot. No, the plan was already in motion. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
And his plan and his plan supersedes all
yeah.
the plans, right? And in superseding
mm-hmm.
that plan, if you deviate from the plan, I'm still going to get my plan
yeah.
executed. Like, we're still going to
right.
get you. So you could think you're doing something, right? And it's
mm-hmm,
like, okay, but my plan supersedes your plan, and I'm still going to put you back on my plan, you know, because this
yeah.
is what it is. So it's like he said, the plan will whip you. That's the language he used. He said,
yeah.
the plan will whip you if you deviate
right.
from the plan. And so when I hear things like that, and that's why I'm grateful for how he expressed it to me, that when I get stressed and when I have anxiety, it's like, okay, whatever it is that I'm doing is not working. Like, so
mm-hmm.
I'm ready to get back into alignment with whatever Allah's plan is, and I will execute that. I will move and
yeah.
activate my motions in the directions towards that, because I'm not trying to have the plan whip me back into it. I want to choose to go willingly
right.
without a problem and lean in that direction. So I think that it is important for us to become aware of the language and the right questions to ask, because the moment Allah is right, and that's why I say it's so beautiful, like Allah wants our success so, it's just so written in the law of everything that we do, that this execution of it, Allah still inspires the question, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Allah still
mm-hmm.
inspires, sends you the question to ask. And if we're listening, we will ask it, and simultaneously in the time of asking, the solution is right in the question. And
absolutely.
We have to be willing to continue to unpack that. And I think that that's what's so beautiful about the mercy and the love that Allah has available to us to seek our peace, for us to find satisfaction,
mm-hmm.
for us to be in a calmness. And so many times we run away from that because we're like, well, why is Allah doing this? Like, Allah, not do you choosing
yeah.
the anxiety. You're
yeah.
choosing the stress at this point because you're not listening when the question is inspired upon your heart to be like, okay, Allah, help me understand what is blocking me. Okay, so we're talking about blockages? All right, so let's look at this thing and do
all
this
right.
work to unblock those.
Alhamdulillah. Let me jump in. I'm going to go ahead and share another piece.
Yay, come on.
Mention what you mentioned. I'm going to say, now this is also, this is no boast, but this is a teaser. I'm just using that language because these are really actually a portion of a chapter of a book that I'm continuing to work on. So you're getting a preview of a snippet of it, but as it relates to this will of God, right? So we'll just mention a little bit of it here. All right. So here's the imagery is. So no matter who or whatever individual is talking about trying to achieve or accomplish, there's a role for the will of Allah in all that we hope to accomplish. That's very, very important. We just talked about, you know, Allah has already planned and they plan. They plan, Allah has already planned, and Allah is the best planner, right? So no matter what your plan is, you have to include the will of Allah in your plan, right? When you don't include the will of Allah in your plan, it's like you plan, like God has nothing to do with it. Problem. Okay, so that's the way that it is, right? And the Quran in the 8th chapter, Surah Al-Anfal, I believe an expression of it is the spoils of war. And when you understand business, then people will let you know the business is war, okay? So in any case, the spoils of war. So here's the verse, A'udhu Billahi Minash Shaitan Rajeem. يا أيها الذين آمنوا استجبوا لله والرسول إذا دعاكم لما يحييكم وعلموا أن الله يحول بين المرء والقلب وأنه إليه تحشرون صدق الله العظيم. An expression of it is, O you who believe, give your response to Allah and His Apostle when He calls you to that which will give you life. And know that Allah comes in between a man and his heart, and that it is He to whom you shall all be gathered. You know, no matter what happens in this world, in the end, we all, inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi rajun. So keep that in the plan also. And in Surah Al-Shahr, فَإِذَا فَرَغْتَ فَانْصَبْ وَإِلَّا رَبِّكَ فَرْغَبْ. And when you're free from your immediate task, or when you've accomplished this goal that you strove for, still labor hard, and even
still
as
labor
you
hard.
For that
yes.
next goal, you know, that seven figures after the six figures, right? So even as you strive for that, remember, to God is the final goal. It's like all this planning in this world, good, do it, go for it. Don't forget your share of the material world. But also don't forget that the ultimate goal is God, mashallah. Yeah. All right, so we're just going to just look at this imagery right here. So this is kind of a map. We're going to go maybe about five more minutes over the top of the hour. So this portion is sort of like a map here. So on this side, you have human intentions, will, and plans to realize possibility existing in creation. Okay, I'm sitting where I'm sitting. Everyone is sitting where they're sitting. And they're thinking about, I would like to have this. I would like to do that. I would like to accomplish this. I'd like to reach goal X, Y, Z. Your intentions, that's your will, that's your plan. Fine. All right? So now, on the other side, the circle paralleling that on the other side is the desire, a desired possibility out of all possibilities existing in creation. If you're trying to do something that is, quote, unquote, humanly possible, and there's something, we can talk about the four-minute mile, right? So somebody's trying to break the four-minute mile. Everybody in the world can be saying, hey, it can't be done. Okay, well, that's what they're saying. Just like the Wright brothers and human flight, right? They're crazy. Can't be done. Okay, but look, what does the universe say? what does the potential in the creation say? The potential in creation, I don't know what they're talking about, but it's ready and waiting, but somebody got to qualify to make it happen, right? So in the universe is desired possibilities out of all possibilities that exist, right? The universe is nothing but potential and possibility. That's real. That's true. I can give you quotes from the imam with regard to that. So just in case somebody's troubled with that thought, I don't know. Well, I do know why. It's just because you just don't know. But in the context of reality, everything that's going to happen is going to happen out of the universe, period. That's what's going to happen. Hey, look, you want to see how powerful quote unquote the mind of man and the grace of God on man. This whole James Webb telescope thing. Just look at the little piece about how it operates, how it's put together, and what had to be absolutely correct in order for that thing to get set up out in space, right? One of the things comes by, you think about these canopies that people set up for bazaars and farmers markets. Is that, okay, you got that, you roll it out, and you got to set up the canopy. It's like, shoot, man, I need two people. I need three people. What you trying to do? You just try to open up a canopy, right? These cats,
right.
Mashallah, I didn't put it like that. These scientists have put together a whole package that has to open up exactly right, at an exactly right time, in exactly the right angle, right, in order for it to
yes.
do what it's doing now, right? And you have to plan it and calculate it, including all things that could be wrong, backups to the backups, right, so that when this thing is off the earth and out there in space, it will unfold the way you planned for it to unfold and function the way that you planned it, and then you control it from the earth. Come on now. There were people who were thinking about it, but, I mean, who had the wherewithal to really just even imagine it? So the bottom line is the universe got more possibilities than people imagine, literally speaking, right? All right, but now between those two, between you and I and what we want and the universe and what's possible is the will of Allah and his permission. You can want to get something out of there, but the universe is not his, the creation and the command. The universe belongs to God. He created it. And it says, Sakhara lakum ma fi samawati wa ma fil ard. Allah says, I have created it for it to serve you, but you got to serve me in order to get the service from
mm-hmm.
it. Okay? So many of these people want to accomplish things and say, well, you don't need to believe in God. You don't need to have a God. There is no God. You know what I'm saying? The universe is just universe. You know, it's just here for you to get your stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So let's move and cover that block and we'll be gone. So there's this movement of your will trying to get to the potential in the creation. And then there's the creation with all its potential that's created for you. But what stands between it, what stands between it is God's will. Let me see. Do I want them to have this? Is it time for this? Is it not time for this? You know, should I go ahead and give it to them as a punishment, or should I give it to them as a blessing? That's Allah's will between it all, right? Already open with 2:16, where it says it may be that you dislike something that is good for you, right? And it may be that you hate. You may dislike something that's good for you, and it also says that you like something that you should hate and you hate something that you should like. So it's Allah is the one who knows the khair and the shar, the benefit and the harm of it. And so we make dua to Allah to protect us from the shar, from the harm of things mm-hmm. that are possible, from ourselves and from the creation as well. But also we have to also know that all those possibilities exist for us. So lastly, in terms of the hadith, it says that Allah is good and he only accepts the good, all right? All I can do right now, all that I will do is I'm going to send you to everybody, to Abu Ala Maududi's Tahfim al-Quran 6112. You can find it online, 6112. It's the Quran, the Tahfim al-Quran. And look at his footnote. I'm not going to try to read it through. But look at his footnote for the sixth chapter, Surah Al-An'am. Al-An'am, also the imam points out that Al-An'am, you get animals from that, but also blessings is also inside that term, An'am, that thing that becomes animal. And don't we have blessings from animals as well? Animals are blessed.
Yeah.
Horse is a blessing. Cow is a blessing. Sheep is a blessing, you know? Hunting dogs are a blessing, et cetera, you know, security dogs, whatever. All those blessings, right? But look at that to get a read on how is it that some bad things happen to good things happen to bad people, and the like is very important. But all of it is the will of Allah, right? But you just need to understand what part of Allah's will is this thing that's happening to me playing. That's just existentially in life itself. But when it comes to goal accomplishment, goal achievement, planning, et cetera, it's like Allah wants good things to happen. You know, you've said it, I hear it from you often. You talk about, you know, is it serving people? Is it good in accordance with the will of God? It's like, okay, so the only thing probably stopping you is you. because right. God is good. God is good. He only was good. It's what you're going after. Is it good? Okay, well, God wants it. And okay, what you going to do, right? And finally, we always say, you know, you got to give God something to bless. You want God to bless you? You got to give him something to bless. Look, you don't plant the seed and you go back to the garden looking for apples. It's like, wait, what's the problem here? So then somebody turned and asked you, did you actually plant the seed here? Oh, no, I didn't plant the seed. I just made dua to Allah, and I expected that the blessings going to come. Nah, that ain't happening. It don't work like that.
Yeah, boy.
All right. So we got to bounce. Hi, sweetheart. Always a pleasure.
Hi,
Baba. To look into your beautiful face in this space. All right. So we're going
to
be
you
out
know,
there.
As long as I'm still here, it's another opportunity to bring my soul to the marketplace. Is that what you say?
There you go.
So
That's right. Every morning you wake
morning
up with your soul in your hand as a bargaining chip. That's right.
As
either
a bargaining
benefiting
chip.
It
so,
or
hey, every time
it.
I wake up, I'm rich. And wealthy.
Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar. Yes, you are.
Marketplace. So that's
Allah
what I got. I'm sticking to it.
All right. Takbir. Love you, sweetheart. All right, everybody.
Love you too, Baba.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.